The Press Box is here to catch you up on the latest media stories. Hosted by Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker, these guys have the insight on the biggest stories you care about. Check out The Press Box on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to the 300th episode of the Stadio podcast.
Do you know what? That's really, I'm glad you remember, because in the midst of tonight's drama, I completely forgot.
Well, I'm Moose Kwonga.
And I'm Ryan Hun for the 300th time.
Ryan, how are you doing?
Oh, 300.
300.
The little podcast that could.
Well, talking of the underrated team that could.
No, hang on a minute. Wait, bask a little more. Bask, Musa. Hey, listen, thanks for agreeing to do this with me. It was very kind of you.
Well,
many moons ago.
Well, likewise, man. Likewise. I mean, you know,
just so everyone knows, if you didn't know already, we have told the origin story a couple of times, but Musa definitely didn't need to do Stadio.
Wow.
So thanks, man. Anyway,
my pleasure, man. It's been a joy. It's been a joy.
Congratulations. Continues to be a joy. 300.
Yes, likewise, man. It's big. Yeah. And a special episode because of what we're going to talk about once we get past the admin. But
I mean, admin, Wright's House will be up on Monday, probably next week. We're going to skip the weekend one. We're going to get Ian to talk about stuff after the England game. Stadio will be Friday night, Saturday night. We're going to take Sunday night off. And I think if it all goes to plan, you and I will do Wright's House with Wrighty on Monday. So it's kind of like a Stadio hybrid. And then we'll update you on the schedule for next week because it'll slow down a little bit. Also, I would say that even if we're whizzing through these recaps straight away after the final group games, I think we'll probably towards the end of the tournament give a bit of a deeper debrief on, for example, like Germany. I think we need to talk about Germany a little bit.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
it might take an hour, so we won't do it tonight, but we'll do it another time. But yeah. TheRinger.com/soccer as well. Go check that out. And the Stadio Outros plays on Spotify. All of the music we play on out on each episode, the newest one is at the top. And that's it for the admin. So today we're going to talk about the final games in Group E.
This podcast just be called Japan Goddamn.
And Group F. Wow. Wow. That's a great podcast title.
I mean, they brought it.
Well, we'll talk about that after the break.
We will.
Are we starting there? Because Group E was the group of chaos, right?
We have to.
All right, let's start with Japan, because Japan's result against Spain, 2-1.
We say Group E was a group of chaos, but F ran close. But still, let's go with Group E. So,
I'm interested to see if you publicly say on the podcast what you deemed Croatia and Belgium to be.
Oh, what, the geriatrico? Listen. Belgium's own star player says we're too old to win the cup, World Cup.
Listen, we'll talk about the geriatrico about later.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot. Well done, was it? Some of your finest work. Let's talk about Japan, because Japan have had a kind of wild group phase. Shouts to Jonathan Fisher, who hipped us to it before. So the first time they beat Germany and the first time they've beaten Spain, and they did it in the same group phase.
Wow.
And then they lost to Costa Rica for what I believe was the first time in the middle of that. Although, like we said, I think after that game that they played pretty well, they had all the ball, just got kind of sucker punched, really.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just a disclaimer, by the way, very difficult to watch two important games at once to do a podcast straight away afterwards.
Yes.
Feel like I need another. Like,
I mean, processing. Eyes. It's just because it's what happened.
Mm.
It's the nature. And, you know, watching these games on two screens and going between them as I was, just mind blown, frankly. We saw 10 goals.
Yeah.
Nine goals this evening in the two matches. And not just nine goals, but the way the mood was changing. At one point, both Spain and Germany were out of the World Cup.
I know.
For 3 minute period, which we'll come to in a moment, for 3 minute period, Spain and Germany both out of the World Cup. But let's begin again with Japan, because this was an incredible performance for so many reasons, not just in the group stage, but tonight, because the bravery and the resilience to recover from that first half, where at one point, 20 something minutes, about 20 minutes in, Spain had completed 220 passes and Japan had completed 30. It was a thrashing. At 20 minutes in, it was an absolute demonstration of the footballing arts. Mm. They were stretching them everywhere. Japan couldn't get near them, couldn't press them. The one time they got near Busquets, they fouled him, which was almost a demonstration of just how good he was. And at one point I was thinking, how many players have actually cleanly tackled Busquets in their football careers? It's probably a Hall of Fame at this point, because who gets close? The man was walking around, no one could touch him.
They'll do one of those like round tables when they've all retired.
Round tables. Oh yeah, I'm back in my day, I tackled him cleanly. Oh my goodness, I faked him and I did this. You know, and Spain was spectacular for that first half hour.
Yeah, can I just mention something? Yeah, I noticed, please. I wrote down a couple of things about this, and the Spain thing that I noticed was that I thought Japan pressed really well, actually. They pressed in numbers, they pressed with a lot of energy. And there was one moment when they pressed them really high and then they outnumbered them, in the kind of right centre back position where Rodri was. And it looked like they were in. It looked like they kind of pinned Spain in and they were about to win the ball back. It was very, very reminiscent of those peak pressing Guardiola Barcelona teams.
Mm.
Rodri does this little Cruyff turn, throws two of the guys off, and all of a sudden the pressure's gone.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Well, that's actually, it was funny you mentioned that pressing, because that foreshadowed what would happen in the second half.
Yeah.
Because the thing about that pressing, there was actually a moment in the first half, it was a small moment where Rodri helps the ball and the ball gets to him and he hits it on the half volley out to the right and it goes out to Williams, who they used quite well actually on the switch, I think, in the
good
first half.
Starting.
It was, and also, I mean, I thought he was quite impressive actually. I thought his decision making was really good. But that moment when Rodri was like playing it on, I thought to myself, oh, it's interesting. Like, I love how you move the ball on Spain, but you're taking some risks back there.
Mm.
Like some risks. And actually, that was the first half. It was half an hour in, all fine. But we saw in the second half, those gaps were closed. We saw the aggression Japan came with. And the problem with Spain was, Spain thought Japan were going to come out with more of the same. They did not bargain for the adjustments. Nagatomo going off, great player, but was not really on it. And they brought on Doan in the second half in the wide position, and that had an immediate impact, because then the hunting in packs just became a bit more intense. And Rodri wasn't caught crucially short, but his pass led to effectively the concession that that Simone ended up conceding badly to. Mm. And the funny thing about this was, like, Rodri, not the quickest. And all very well, and Rodri's playing as a centre back in a team which is ball dominant and everyone's hard at the pitch. But this reminded me, in terms of the uncertainty I saw with Rodri, do you remember the time they man-marked Rodri? That Jamie Vardy man-marked Rodri when Leicester just blew away Man City? It reminded me of that. Japan basically did the Jamie Vardy job on Rodri and it just absolutely throttled them. And the problem was, you see now why Jordi Alba starts games and not Balde.
Yeah. Gives
that
them a little
sense.
Bit more control.
Specifically in this
just,
tournament.
I think that's just a maturity and experience thing. I think
it's not knocking him, it's just the way
player.
It is.
It's just, Alba's done and like seen and done it all, basically.
Right, absolutely. He doesn't get caught like they get caught back there. It doesn't happen.
No. We need to talk about the impact of Doan, like coming straight on, scoring straight away.
Yeah.
And then
straight after the half
time. A few minutes later. If this was a classic game of Football Manager, it would have said a 3 minute double salvo. Coming
right.
up, one for the heads.
But they kept on. It was so smart, Japan, because they kept the intensity up while Spain was still slightly rocking.
Well, I mean, their second goal was a pure example of that intensity.
Yeah.
Mitoma absolutely going for a lost cause ball, cut it back for
Tanaka
to
finish. How good a Brighton player has been at the West World Cup?
Oh my
Brighton.
God. Like,
my God.
I mean, you literally said this last night, but this goal, I know that some people are struggling to understand that football is spherical. And also just the laws of the game, and also whether it really did go out or not, while being shown conclusive evidence of it not being fully over the line.
The merest part of the ball has to be in contact to be in. That's the rule.
I don't want to kind of like go after people, but I'm in the UK and I was watching it on ITV, and the coverage of it afterwards was beyond wild, to be honest. I don't really understand it. It was weird, but anyway. it was a goal. It was a perfectly legitimate goal. But I think you mentioned that kind of intensity there, and I think that goal was just that personified.
Yeah.
Can a goal be personified?
Well, yeah, it was, because it was the epitome of everything. Japan's approach in that second half was Spain coming out the same pace that they went in at the break. And, you know, again, poor Morata being overshadowed. Like, Morata was impressive in this half. Again, being overshadowed by events, but he is now, I think he's removed questions about his quality at this point. He's a good enough forward to win a tournament with. The question is if Spain are going to put the pieces around him consistently for him to do that. Ansu Fati arriving in this game maybe later than, you know, I would have liked, considering there's knockout tournament football to be played. The problem that Spain have is they've lost their aura now.
Yeah,
The midfield control is there.
I mean, I think if Spain had needed to win this game to go through, or needed a point to go through, it's hard to say, because even though Germany went, we'll talk about the Germany-Costa Rica game in a minute, but Germany were ahead and Spain, as it stood, were fine. So it's always really hard to tell in those ones if you need a result and whether you don't, and how that changed things, because Spain still had all of the ball and they were. I think Japan defended really, really well. They were dropping into this really, really compact, really solid back five. Occasionally a sixth would slip in there as well. And they just, because Spain don't have that focal point as a nine, or say like someone like a Giroud, or even a Fulcrook.
Yeah.
I mean, Morata was off at that point. It just meant that most of the defending that Japan did was in front of them, but that was by design and not by fluke. And they deserve a huge amount of credit, because I think that what they've shown through this group phase is, it's like they have a load of switches in front of them. Right, at the moment we're going to go intense press and we're going to hit teams high up the pitch. Click.
Yeah.
Or actually we're going to turn that off and we're going to defend really, really deep at the moment and go counter-attack. Click. Or actually we're going to control the ball and just go hyper-technical. Click. Like, they've actually demonstrated a super wide range of attributes. And to be honest, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised at the range. I'm not surprised at how well they're doing it.
It's very, very actually 2016 Leicester style. Look at this. Yeah. Pass completion stats. Spain completed almost 1,000 passes at 91%. Almost 1,000. 968. Japan completed 153 passes at 67% possession. That is total Leicester, because that is like, you're hitting passes, high risk passes to open the gaps up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Leicester had like routinely 65, 70%. No one could work it out till we actually saw them play. And you were like, oh, you've got supremely technical players high up the pitch who have to execute with the greatest possible efficiency. And they did it. They absolutely did it. And it's incredible. Other teams in the tournament now watching this, they'll be cackling, because anybody can be got. This is the lesson of today's football. Got. Anyone can be got.
18% possession, 1.27 XG to Spain's 1.12.
Incredible. Incredible efficiency. I mean,
I'm really happy for them. Obviously, there are a few groups where you're like, yeah, be gone. I'm not really bothered about you going. This group was another one where, obviously, we're disappointed for Germany to go out, because we live there and we follow them closely. I don't think that Germany, this Germany performance through this group stage deserves the post-mortem that it will probably get. I think there are questions to be asked, for sure. I think that also you need to caveat with the fact that it's the first tournament cycle of Hansi Flick. It's not in the best shape, the squad. I remember talking to Ian about some stuff, and I was saying that it almost felt for me like it was a tournament too soon, because the real talent in that Germany squad, maybe bar Antonio Rudiger and a couple of people in the midfield, it's like Jamal Musiala, you know, or maybe Serge Gnabry, but Musiala is,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
Musiala, we saw in this game specifically that Musiala is already trying to take charge of Germany games, and he's kind of overtaken Kai Havertz as the guy who can change that game.
Without question.
And I think he's probably putting in the kind of, or he's grabbing the game in a way that I think people expected or wanted Kai Havertz to do, especially late Leverkusen era Kai Havertz. I think Müller will probably move on now. I don't think he'll be back for Germany. I assume not. But actually, the selection from this game wasn't too bad from Flick. Like, he made changes that worked. Kimmich started at right back, and I thought Germany were a bit better for it, actually. It just allows them to get the better midfielders in midfield.
Right, yeah.
They're still a little bit ropey at the back. I saw Schweinsteiger said that Tony Rudiger is the only like elite defender, the rest are okay Bundesliga defenders, what a turn which I think is a little bit harsh.
And what a turnaround it is for Rudiger, because not being funny,
yeah,
Rudiger well, 3 years ago was catching hell from everyone. Cooked. Yeah,
people. A lot of people were saying some really off-key stuff about Rudiger, actually.
We remember, we seen it. We seen
it. Yeah, of course we do. But yeah, I mean, Germany won the game. They drew against Spain. They got unstuck against Japan, who also did Spain. So no real howlers. Like this, I don't think there's been a real howler from Germany. Even in the actually, probably one of their best performances came in the Japan game. They just weren't ruthless enough.
Yeah.
So. We've seen good teams could easily this tournament.
If it's 2-0, it's good night. Gundogan hitting the post.
Exactly.
And it's not going to be a thing. It's not going to be a thing, but they created a really high quality of chance against Japan.
Yeah. I'm actually really glad that they didn't go out tonight based on the result tonight, in a way.
You could argue, actually, the irony is Germany, the team that took Japan the most seriously in this group, in terms of the performance they produced and the intensity.
Yeah.
They're just unlucky with some of the finishing. Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, Musiala... amazing against tonight. When he hit off the post in the second half with his right foot when he cut inside.
Clean.
Just so good. And a shout for Fulkrug again, who came on and I thought played really well. And
really well. That save from Navas.
So much like, oh, he was in the Zweite Bundesliga last season. He's 28 or whatever. It's like, you know, just let the guy be.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, that save that Navas made with his face.
Unreal.
Such a good save.
Rolling back the years.
Like I say, I don't want to sound like I'm sitting on the fence here, and I know that people need to be criticised when criticism is due, but I think that with Germany, I don't think they were ever quite as good as people thought they were going to be for this tournament, maybe just because they're Germany, but also I don't think they're quite as bad as some people will make them out to be in the aftermath.
Every weakness that I feared Germany would have is the one that, like, how do I say this? This World Cup has not presented that many surprises. Like, people have either advanced or gone out in ways that you would expect. Like, it was always the fear with Germany that goals, decisive finishing in key games would be the thing. Like, in these small, small, like, margins, that was always the fear. And some could say it was a lack of a regular centre forward or whatever, but it is a thing that basically told in the end. Like, Germany did not go out by much when all's said and done. And we've said this before in football, it's very easy to draw the wrong conclusions from like negative results. But yeah, very disappointing obviously for Germany to go out. And also the Thomas Müller thing, it's just such a shame because this is a man that started with 10 goals in 2 World Cups and doesn't look like scoring, being a volume goal scorer again for them.
I just seen a quote from him actually. He said, "If this was my last game, it was a huge pleasure. I've done it with love. We experienced incredible moments together in every game. I tried to leave my heart on the pitch." And I think that's the thing about Thomas Müller. Like I said, I think we'll cover more of this Germany stuff maybe in some thoughts towards the end of the World Cup. But yeah, Germany are in a bit of a kind of, they're still half, they've got like a toe or two in the post-World Cup winning era.
Mm.
And they're not fully free from that yet.
No.
Spain feel like they're a little bit further along.
There's only
Busquets there still, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So
yeah.
So that is Group E. Japan and Spain. And can we just once more, because people will probably still be talking about whether it went over the line or not. Japan finished top of the group.
Top of the group.
Top of a group that included Spain and Germany and Costa Rica.
Just absolutely delighted for them. Yeah. Shout out to Moriyasu as well, because to coach a team like that, to manage a team like that, because... two very tough first halves that he had to bring them out of. And to get your team with the right headspace, to make the changes, to get your squad to buy into it, to get your squad to buy into a situation where they know they're going to get limited minutes, some of the attackers, but be decisive. We said 1,000 times on Stadio, your closing 11, your starting 11 may not be the one that you expect to be the one that ends up winning the match. Also, massive shout out to Yoshida, who at this point is going to end up with a statue in every major Japanese city.
And Southampton.
Absolute legend. Absolute legend. Yeah.
Before we move on from this game, I just want to give a quick shout out to Stephanie Frappa, who became the first woman to officiate in a men's World Cup game. I mean, she's a very, very, very qualified referee and fully deserves to be there and did a great job, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. In a chaotic game. I thought it's great. Yeah. Yeah. Thought she's fantastic.
Hope she does it again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So Japan are going to play Croatia in the next round.
That is an excellent matchup.
And Spain will play Morocco, and we will talk about those two after the break.
Wow, yes, we will.
All right, man. Where to begin in Group F? Should we begin with Morocco? Because Morocco needed to win the game to go through.
Yeah.
And they did. They beat Canada 2-1 to guarantee their place in the knockout stage.
I think it's understated just how good a team this Morocco side is. Not just the individuals, but the cohesion. And Canada as well. Canada as well, just like, you understandably deflated.
Mm.
Understandably deflated after putting in an outstanding first performance against Belgium and not getting the 3 points. And then the kind of having to regroup and go against a very, very canny streetwise Croatia. You know, when you go against Croatia, you almost have to prepare for long periods where it's going to be slow and you're going to be pressing and just conserve energy.
Mm.
And I think also maybe we didn't quite, maybe rumors of Croatia's death were greatly exaggerated. Like that midfield is just so resilient. With this, they've swapped out, obviously, Rakitic for Kovacic. Luka Modric seems to have 5 sets of lungs and 3 brains.
It's
unbelievable.
You know, occasionally, like, people have cats who are like 25.
Right.
And you're like, what?
Like, and I was like, jumped on a roof. It's climbing onto the,
Why is that cat breakdancing?
Why's the cat breakdancing?
It's like, what? That's what Luka Modric is. Luka Modric is a 25-year-old breakdancing cat.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's genuinely incredible, the match control. So obviously Canada reeling from that, and of course they walk into Morocco, and Morocco just had destiny behind them today.
You mentioned it before, but that Belgium game was the one for Canada.
It was.
If they win that, I think they go through, because I just think it shapes their whole group phase.
Yeah, and that's right.
We said it before, but they deserve to beat Belgium. Roberto Martinez said after the game that they deserve to beat Belgium.
I wonder if they didn't understand just quite how good they were. I wonder.
Maybe.
I wonder because...
Maybe they should have taken a leaf out of Moussa Okonga's book. Maybe what, they needed to think that they were horses.
Don't ask destiny for permission. I've said it before. You just can't. But Morocco just came out and that is a team not asking destiny twice.
But I wouldn't want to play them.
Yeah. Not at all.
They're a side that seems to be able to hurt you in an instant. It's just one of those kind of like, you need to keep your footballing wits about you, because we saw it literally with the opening goal, slight mishap, straight on it, Ziyech scores, second one the same.
Horrible, yeah.
You just have to completely be on. And I know that sounds like a massive cliche, but they just seem to be able to hurt you in so many ways. And it's the thing about them playing Spain in the next round, all of a sudden I woke up after that game and they were like, oh, Spain had like 78% possession and 900 million passes and lost 1-0. I'm like, ah.
And if anyone can do that to them, it's Morocco. You know, what's going to be interesting, Hakimi, because you know Jordi Alba's going to be starting that. It's going to be back to the basics. Jordi Alba against Hakimi, that is a crucial clash. And then you've got this front three, Boufal, En-Nesyri, and Ziyech against that back line. That is not pleasant. That is not a pleasant proposition, because those are three highly elusive individuals. Like, if I was the Spain back four, I'd be thinking, it'd be nice to know exactly who we have to mark. I don't know who's going to come. You know, you do to me. Who's going to, you look at that, who's going
to
come at
you? Do you know who's knocking on Luis Enrique's door right now, asking to go back into midfield? It's fucking Rodri. Sorry. Can I? Do you know what? I might see if Luis Enrique's on Twitch right now and just be like, sorry, can Rodri go back in midfield for the next game?
You say that joking, but I was looking at Iniesta in the stands and I swear the great man put his shin pads on at one point. He was like, listen.
Yeah, but for one sec, I also thought he was sat there with Gavi and it was his son.
But Morocco against Spain.
Sorry,
it's
before
not...
you move on from that,
yeah,
can we just give a quick mention to how nervous Iniesta looked?
He looked so nervous.
Because I think he thought, like, we could be in trouble here.
Well, he remembers 2014.
Yeah.
when he was the one player that actually still balled out for Spain, the others kind of fell below the standards. He remembers it well. He knows how that stuff can collapse. But Morocco, yeah, Canada get a goal back. Ball squeezing at the near post, poor defensive, as a defensive error. But that was all the goals, and Morocco winning 2-1. And richly deserved. Richly deserved. Tough matchup for Spain. They won't be enjoying that.
I mean,
not one bit.
The knockouts are shaping up to look to be like extremely entertaining. There isn't one so far that I've seen where I've thought, I mean, look, think the first one is Netherlands, USA.
It's tasty.
Then we get Argentina, Australia. Then we get France, Poland. Then we get England, Senegal. Then we get Japan, Croatia. Then we get TBD. Then we get Morocco, Spain. And then we get another TBD.
Those are matchups that I don't think that... See, I think Croatia prefer Spain. I think those teams prefer each other. The type of thing... The type of threat that Japan pose, the kind of threat that Morocco pose, is more unorthodox, I would say. You know what you're getting. Croatia, Spain, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting a midfield battle, right? That's it. You know what you're getting. So you plan accordingly. Morocco, Japan. When are the subs going to arrive? When's the intensity going to explode? Because can you handle the uplifting pressure? And we'll get to this game out of segue, uplifting pressure. We'll get to the Geriatrico.
Yes.
Belgium.
Croatia nil, Belgium nil.
Wow, this game is a... I never thought I would see a tragedy greater than a Greek tragedy, but a Belgian tragedy must now enter the lexicon. This was painful. I actually wish that Croatia had got the penalty. They were disallowed by the marginal offside. I wish they got the penalty. I wish Modric had scored it. And I wish it had been 1-0 Croatia. And I wish that Lukaku had never had cause to have the second half that he had. This was, so just to recap, 0-0 obviously. Croatia have a penalty awarded for a foul by Carrasco. Gets pulled back for offside. VAR in the first half. Strange decision, but marginal, but we see it. Still, disallowed. So the penalty is never taken in the end. We get to the second half. Lukaku, who it must be said, acted by many accounts as the peacemaker in the dressing room argument between several Belgian players, very unhappy with the way things are going in the World Cup. Lukaku acting as a peacemaker, so he's already done his bit for the squad, comes on and misses three chances, I would say. Three clear chances. The headed chance looks... it looks worse on repeated viewing. They kind of all do.
I think both of them are finishes from a player who is half a step slow.
That is absolutely right. Even the initial foot movement on all of them.
Yeah, it's the movement that you have, like, and I'm
the first step. It's like a tennis player, bad footwork.
This isn't a fully fit Romelu Lukaku.
No.
And we've talked about this before, about when you come back from injury, it's like you spend a split second extra making the movements because you're not sharp enough to be automatic. And that's not a criticism. That's a playing your way back into being fully match fit.
Yes.
All I saw tonight, maybe apart from the one that hit the post was interesting, because I think that's just a spur of the moment. Two players are bearing down on you. I need to get a shot away here. And he could be cute and kind of like slightly dink it, curl it, and it goes in. But I think that a fully fit Romelu Lukaku maybe has an extra half a second.
The one that hits the post with, the first one.
An extra split second because he's not thinking about his movement so much because he's not just got back from an injury.
Mm.
And I think the second and third, the one off the chest and the header. Was it the header that... No, it was the one off the chest where it looked like, I think it was Lovren.
The one off the chest that comes, the one the chest comes out, he sees it almost at the last minute.
Yeah, he's just like, oh God, because it looks like the defender is going to head that away.
Yes, and it comes at the last minute. And the header, he goes over the bar. Again, he's slightly obscured by someone else. The problem is it's all three together.
He was saved by the ball going out of play on the header, wasn't he?
Yeah, the problem is, I think, is that it's all three together, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's his own reaction in terms of he knows what his level is.
Mm.
Does that make sense? And it was difficult. It was difficult to watch because he's someone who has had to fight at all stages. He went on loan, different clubs, made his career, got his place at the top of the tree. And when he was at Inter, winning that Serie A title at the Euros, he was unimpeachable. At that point, he could say, there are five number nines, you choose to lead your line, and I can argue that I'm one of them. At that point, just post-Euros, when he really, you know, you're scoring against Donnarumma like it's nothing from the penalty spot in the Euros, and he's on a run like, you know, a really impressive one. Again, with all the stuff he's handling off the field as well, with the racist booing and all the rest of it. And this was a really painful thing to watch as a football fan, as a fan of his, because it's a very tough, it's going to be hard for him to come back from this.
We see performances sometimes from players that we kind of know, we know they're going to cop a load of shit for.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I thought Shearer was pretty good with it on BBC, actually.
Oh, right. I didn't see that. What was he saying?
Yeah, he just didn't dunk on him. He was quite just analytical and I think he knows. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the future holds for Romelu Lukaku. It's going to be really interesting to see what his, I don't like using this word so much, but like legacy, if you know what I mean, as a striker is, or what, how he's revered or how he's thought of in, you know, 5-10 years after retirement, because, you know, he's not getting any younger. He's not washed by any means. And I actually think that he has a skill set that means he can play deep into his 30s if he wants to. I just really want to see him maintain that second season into form.
I wonder if it's almost like go off socials,
yeah,
minimal interviews. Just get your people around you and really just like be like, actually, this is a collective failure. The Belgium team, look, they were going to get cooked in the next round, I reckon. If they went through to the next round and they play against a Spain or a Morocco, I think they get dissected. Well, not Morocco, they wouldn't face them, but I think they get dissected. I think it happens. I don't think there was much more life in them. I think this was basically like the last, they get through this round, it's the last hurrah. So I think he has to look at it and be like, actually, yes, I missed these big chances, but let me step back and look at the Belgium team. It's a collective failure. It's a collective.
Straight from the jump, Perisic has that moment 7 seconds in. Like, how Belgium have allowed that?
Absolutely.
And then Mertens has a chance early on. De Bruyne plays him through. And the finish is just like, is so bad.
And actually, look, I think that the biggest damage done in this was very possibly, was the Kevin De Bruyne interview. I saw that and thought to myself, we're too old to win. That's like wild because you had Vertonghen coming out afterwards, and for that to be mentioned in a post-match interview, because here's the thing, Eden Hazard talked about the rainbow armband and we criticised that, but I don't think that was disruptive within the dressing room, right? That's not a thing that it really, no one referred to that as a thing that really substantially affected the team spirit, which is, you know, obviously bothers me from a moral standpoint, but whatever. But the point is, in terms of something that was genuinely disruptive, the De Bruyne interview was genuinely disruptive because you're basically putting a target on everyone. You're basically saying, come out and press us because we can't handle intensity. Mm. And of course, that's what teams did. Teams flew at them. You do not need a team that contains Canada, Morocco in particular. You do not need a group containing Canada, Morocco, any further incentive to come and press you because people think you're old. And that's what they did. Mm. And then, of course, you're playing against another team that's supposedly, in brackets, old, Croatia, who are the absolute masters of tempo. Of course you're going to get cooked. Croatia know they need a 0-0. That's all they need and go away with. Then they can handle you. And that's it. Strategic 0-0 draws. So yeah, Belgium have got a lot of thinking to do. The thing about the De Bruyne thing as well, it's just, I read that interview in The Guardian with Simon Hattonstone. And it's interesting because it's one of those interviews that, like, obviously is very stage managed. You have De Bruyne's management team is there, his family, his people. It's quite an intimidating setup. It's quite cleverly stage managed, but it's still, it's interesting how much De Bruyne manages to reveal. Mm. And a key thing to me was like, this man is not particularly enthused or excited by this World Cup campaign. Yeah. He did not sound like a human being particularly excited to be at the tournament. I'm not saying he mailed it in. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that the extra level of desire, you know, the Paul Pogba speech, when he's like, this is ours, and everyone sort of sees it and it's like, my goodness, this Pogba's like the leader. That's not the energy that De Bruyne entered this tournament with. And that's what wins you the World Cup. You don't win a World Cup at 80% of your intensity. You just don't.
It's a real slog to win the World Cup. And brutal. I think that's why we mentioned it, I think, in the men's Euros as well. when talking about England that it's like rarely do teams come out of the block and just play unbelievable football and blow every single team away and go all the way to the final and win every game 4-0 and it's just, wow.
A carnival.
Yeah, I mean, that point, for example, against the USA is looking really very smart for England right now in terms of progressing through the group.
Yeah.
It's really different tournament football in terms of thinking strategically, and I think that's why some people are way more suited to international management than club management.
Yes.
With Belgium, I think overall Roberto Martinez did a pretty good job. I don't think he did the most amazing job. I think he did a good job, you know?
I think so.
It's a good opportunity for Belgium to rethink about where they're going to go. I think a few of that squad won't feature again under a new coach. I think it's a good opportunity to move on from a few of that squad. Yeah, I don't know, almost kind of like take the pressure off a little bit, I think. I think the pressure that was on them to be this golden generation, I think was a little bit more than they needed.
I think a little bit because they speak French as well. And everyone's looking at them and comparing them with France. They realize actually, they forget that Belgium's quite a bit smaller than France. And actually, like, they're kind of punching. Given their size, they're kind of punching.
Just over 11 and a half million.
And all of that, like, I think it's a bit of that. I think, honestly, it's the Francophone thing. It's a bit lazy. The comparisons are a bit lazy. They're not really that fair. And I think also the fact that, like, all those great players peaked at the same time. Like, Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne aren't just, like, great Belgian players. They're generationally great players. Peak Eden Hazard now, of course, you know, of course the injuries, it's just slowed him to a point where it's just, it's unfair, it's brutal. But Peak Eden Hazard's, like, one of the greatest dribblers the last 20 years. Just, it's astonishing.
Yeah.
Line-breaking defenders. Vincent Kompany, like, these are genuine.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, we can pull out all of these amazing Belgian players over the last decade. But when did they? None of them really converged at their peak.
That's my point. But it's even if they, but it's sheer chance.
I'm doing double down.
Absolutely no. But so yeah, like bad luck Belgium. Morocco advance. Croatia advance. Two of the most streetwise teams left in the tournament. If we're going to call this the Streetwise World Cup, because there are some smart, there are some high footballing IQs in that second round. For sure.
Should we leave it there today?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's wrap.
Another day of World Cup football in the book.
Yes.
Some of they say on TV. I feel like because we're going almost daily at the moment, I feel like I'm like signing off of a broadcast. And that's day so-and-so of the World Cup. Don't forget to check the highlights later on whatever terrestrial channel I'm plugging. But we will actually be back on Friday.
Because American radio stations like WKTR, they've also got like four letters, don't they?
You're listening WKTR. To STADIO live every night after the World Cup games. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
We hope everyone's safe and well and enjoying the football. And if you're not, then hopefully enjoying other things.
Yes.
We'll be back on Friday after the games. Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer and our Stadio Outros players on Spotify. Speaking of which, feels apt, you know, because these exits are coming thick and fast at the moment. Playing out on Hampshire and Fote, a tune called End Song. Anything you want to add, Musok Wonga?
Nothing further.
All right, everyone, much love. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
See you then.